Now,
the views expressed on AM360 by the host, hostesses, or guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Share Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific and personal medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to consult an advisor for your specific circumstances.
You have listened to us over 500,000 times. American Muslim 360.
That's interesting.
Assalamu alaikum. This is American Muslim 360 radio broadcast.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Ar-Rahmanir Rahim. مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
American Muslim 360 is
too legit.
We will never quit. American Muslim 360, your number one Muslim radio station.
Can't touch this. Can't touch this.
Community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at cwsconline@gmail.com. That's cwsconline@gmail.com. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum and good morning, everyone. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen. Wassalatu wassalam ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajma'in. This is Edward Ahmed Mitchell, the host of Care on Air, the Civil Rights Hour. It is just after 11 a.m. on Wednesday, January 23rd, 2019. Thank you to anyone joining us on the phone, and thank you to anyone who might be listening to this program later. I believe this marks our fourth program with AM360, and we're very happy to be doing this, and we appreciate all the support from the CBSC Roundtable and all the other shows that are on air that have encouraged people to listen to our program. If you're listening to this show for the first time, Care on Air, the Civil Rights Hour, focuses on usually three issues. One, current events. Two, general advice and guidance about some of the pitfalls, illegal and otherwise, that American Muslims may be facing. And finally, an educational Q&A where we answer questions from the audience about things that may be on your mind. Today, as usual, inshallah, I want to begin by discussing just some current events that have been going on in the past week that are of relevance to the American Muslim community. Then we will, I'll take a break to let public service announcements play. And then, inshallah, we will discuss the educational topic for today. And then after that, we will go to Q&A, inshallah. So first, over the past week, it's been a very busy week for us here at Care, Georgia. In our line of work, the civil rights field, every week is very different. Some week there may not be a lot going on. You're sitting in the office, you're handling emails and phone calls, and it's all quiet on the Western Front. Another week, something unexpected happens and you're very busy. It's all hands on deck, and just one particular topic can occupy a lot of your time. This past week for us was one of those weeks where something came up that ended up occupying a lot of our time. And it's something that, strangely, has happened across the country. There are two incidents that occurred that I'm going to spend a lot of time talking about today and what the implications are for the American Muslim community. And the story is going to be somewhat negative. So before I jump into that, let me start with other things that are more positive. So number one, we all know about the government shutdown that has now entered, I believe it's 34th day of many government workers going unpaid, 800,000 federal workers, including people who work at the airports, law enforcement agencies, the IRS, and other agencies that keep the government functioning. This has obviously been a huge stress for people not only in the D.C., Virginia, Maryland area, but all around the country. People don't realize they have federal employees who work all across the country who are being negatively impacted by this shutdown. Thankfully, I'm happy to report that American Muslims have stepped up to help support those federal workers impacted by the shutdown. We've seen this in states as varied as Ohio, Washington, D.C., and other states, Muslims stepping up to try to help the people impacted by this shutdown. For example, out in Knoxville, Tennessee, there's a Muslim out there whose nonprofit raised about $22,000 for families impacted by the shutdown. That was launched by Celebrate Mercy, which is a Muslim organization founded by Tariq Al-Masidi, who some of you may know. He's been running that website for several years. They not only engage in educational activities about Islam and the Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, they also spend a good bit of time engaging in charitable activities for people in our nation. They've launched charitable drives to help repair synagogues that were attacked by neo-Nazis, to assist people who have been victims of hate crimes. Now they've also launched this LaunchGood crowdfunding campaign to help raise money for people impacted by the shutdown. They raised over $10,000 within the first 10 hours of this campaign, and at last check they were at $22,000, alhamdulillah. And again, that just goes to show that, one, this is a good thing for Muslims to do. We should be people who are a mercy to mankind, helping people around us, improving the world around us. And when there is injustice, that we, do what we can, inshallah, to help address it. So, inshallah, they get good deeds from doing this. And also people get to see, what Muslims are all about, what Muslims really believe and what Muslims really practice. Another example, there have been people from a Muslim group that went to a national park to help clean that up. Because, as you know, when the national parks are not staffed, there's no one to pick up the trash. And it just builds up and builds up and builds up. So you got Muslims around the country who are helping to clean up trash in national parks here in the state of Georgia as well, I believe. Another thing that is happening is Muslims have been helping to give food, bringing food to government workers, including government workers at the airport, to give them lunch, take them out for lunch. They may give them a free meal because they are going and working and protecting us by the grace of God without any food. They, the airport needs guards. The airport needs security guards. They can't just leave en masse, and so they have to be there to work, and they're not getting paid. And this is obviously injustice. Even within the teachings of our faith, there's a saying from the Prophet, may peace and blessings and prayers be upon him, that, I may be paraphrasing this a bit, but the worker should be paid before his sweat dry, something to that effect. Allah knows best. But the point being that when someone does a service for you, they need to be paid for that. We do not believe in this country in involuntary servitude, but when we force federal workers to show up to work every day and we are not paying them for their service, what is that but involuntary servitude? And of course, they could quit their jobs, but they'd be unemployed, an even worse situation. And when the shutdown ends, they may not be able to get back to their job. So this is a serious problem that is happening at the national level. It's a sign of incredible dysfunction and division that this country is experiencing, that this government is experiencing. But it's nice to see that American Muslims are doing positive things to try to help bring some sanity back to our nation by showing mercy to people. And by the way, including the people who have not necessarily been merciful to us. For example, there have been Muslims, including CARE, my organization, who gave food to the TSA, Transportation Security Administration. They obviously do critically important work helping to keep us safe, but we've obviously been critical of the TSA for sometimes profiling Muslims, targeting Muslims, you know, making Muslim women take off their hijabs, pulling Muslims out of line for extra security. You know, we've been critical of them for that. And yet Muslims and CARE have stepped up and tried to help these people. You know, they're doing a job, and sometimes they don't do it right. But we are not a religion that goes around cursing people. We are here to help people. And if it's helping people, we can cause them to have a better image of their Muslim neighbors, then, you know, that is a side benefit of it. Alhamdulillah. So that's what's been happening the past week. We really don't know when this shutdown will end. Right now, you know, President Trump does not want to cave without a win, something he can claim is a political win. People on the far right don't even want him to make a deal that would, for example, allow him to extend protections for DACA, young people who were brought here through no choice of their own as children. Even that bothered people on the far right. And, of course, people on the left and in the mainstream really do not want to build this wall, which many of us think would be a symbol of racism, which many of us think would be ineffective and unnecessary. And, of course, the president said Mexico was going to pay for his wall, so it makes little sense to force the American taxpayer to spend $5 billion on a wall that the Mexican government was supposedly going to pay for. And, of course, multiple people during the campaign said, this is a lie. Mexico is not going to pay for the wall. The president insisted, no, Mexico would pay for the wall. And if that's the case, then he should make the Mexicans pay for the wall. But they're not going to do that because they think it's racist. They think it's unnecessary. They're not going to put up their own money to indulge in this political fantasy. And so the American taxpayer should not be forced to foot the bill for what is ultimately a political statement, not a practical policy. So that is what's going on right now. Inshallah, that gets resolved hopefully soon. Another thing I want to highlight going on in the Muslim community, there have been protests in Sudan against the Sudanese government led by Mr. Omar Bashir. He took power in Sudan, I believe, in 1989 in a coup and has led the country since then. He, as you may know, has also been accused of gross injustice against not only Muslims in Sudan. He is a Muslim, but against other Muslims in Sudan, but against the Christian minorities and ethnic minorities in the country. There are protests now against economic conditions in the country, against his government. Those protests have been met in some cases with violence. Here in Georgia, there was a protest held by the Georgia Sudanese community a few weeks ago outside CNN to raise awareness about this issue. And obviously, the sad thing is that whether it's this issue, whether it's the Central African Republic, whether it's Kashmir, even the treatment of Muslims in China, is that these injustices do not get as much attention, you know, as other things that we know about. For example, Palestine, we all know very much about that. It's got incredible religious significance. Our government is heavily involved in the plight of the Palestinian people. So obviously that's a great relevance and awareness to us. But we've also got to be aware of what's going on in these other nations around the world, even Sudan. Our government may not have great influence over the Sudanese government, obviously, but we as Muslims still want to be aware of what is happening to our brothers and sisters around the world. And to God willing, speak up. So I'm glad that Muslims here, Sudanese Americans, are speaking up about what's happening to their compatriots back home. And we pray that, inshallah, this comes to a peaceful resolution. You know, we as Muslims do not believe in becoming violent, even when we disagree with our governments. We believe in respectful debate and speaking truth to power in a respectful way. Even Moses, may peace be upon him, spoke to Pharaoh gently. And so when our leaders do experience that sort of criticism, they need to, you know, respond not with violence and tear gas, but by listening, by being patient, and by trying to improve their behavior. And yes, perhaps by stepping down. If they have, you know, took power illegally in the first place and they're not doing a good job, then, you know, our leaders, may God grant them the humility to know when they should step aside and step down. And may God grant a peaceful resolution of the situation in Sudan. Another topic I want to talk about is a New York Times columnist named Michelle Alexander, who some of you may know. She's a very prominent writer. And she authored a piece on MLK Day titled Time to Break the Silence About Palestine. And what she argued in this editorial was that, one, many progressive people, liberals in America, are silent about our government's role in causing harm to the Palestinian people, because they are afraid of being called anti-Semitic, because they're afraid of losing support from various foundations, that even though they recognize the injustice of the situation and the injustice our nation plays in it, they just want to avoid that political hot topic. And Michelle Alexander basically argued that, you know, much like Dr. King taught, she cannot afford to be silent in the face of injustice anymore. And so she wrote this very detailed, well-written editorial addressing this issue. And she's obviously been heavily criticized for criticizing the Israeli government and its policies, as she could have predicted. People have accused her of anti-Semitism and other things, which are completely false. And it's this odd paradigm. It's this odd pattern, I should say, that has happened. We saw the Mark Lamont Hill controversy, the Angela Davis controversy, now Michelle Alexander. What we're seeing really is African Americans increasingly speaking up about the plight of the Palestinian people and its similarities to the what African Americans experienced in this country under Jim Crow and what Africans experienced in South Africa under apartheid. And many African Americans are starting to speak up and say, you know, this is not okay that our government is funding and supporting this oppression. It's not good for us, our values. It's not good for anyone in the whole land, Jews, Christians, Muslims. The continued occupation and oppression of the Palestinian people is not good for anybody. And to the extent that our government plays a preeminent role in this occupation oppression continuing, we should take actions to stop it and to force peace in this region. We've got the financial, the military, and economic power and influence over all parties involved to make them do that. But the problem is, obviously, under the Trump administration, that's not going to happen, it appears. And even under past administrations, there was not that real interest in holding the Israelis and the Palestinians' feet to the fire and making them, do what is right and just and reach a peaceful resolution to this situation, a peaceful end to the occupation. So that's another thing that is happening, and I think it's a very important pattern that we should keep track of because, again, as this, you know, if African Americans become wise to this situation, start speaking up in mass as the backbone of the Democratic Party, we really could create a huge sea change in how our government addresses this issue, how our government speaks about this issue, and hopefully God will lead our government to play a positive role and not a negative role in resolving this situation in the Holy Land as respected in various faiths, Judaism, Islam, Christianity. So those are some current events that have happened. The final current event that I want to address, I will say for after a few public service announcements, I'll catch my breath, and then I want to spend the bulk of the program talking about that issue, inshallah, and then at the end we'll open it up for any questions that anyone may have. My engineer, if we got any public service announcements, I'll let you play a few of those, and then I will come back, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum. Talk to you all again in a few minutes, inshallah.
As-salamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Bismillahi rahman rahim. This is Sister Noura Amatala Muhammad reminding each and every one of you to register in the Model Community National Resource Directory. We need to know your skills, your talents, your experience, your professional expertise. Whatever you have to offer to help us to strengthen the model community in order that we may go on and do the great work for which we are responsible to remake the world. It is our collective intellect that will accomplish this task. And each one of us is responsible to let it be known what you have to offer toward this great task that lies ahead of us. It is through our strong model community that we will be able to remake the world. It is our collective intellect that is most important in this process. Working together, we can build a strong and viable community that will serve the needs of all of us in the process to remake the world. Register today. Go to www.bwsc.edu. U.S. and search for MCNRD, the Model Community National Resource Directory. CWSC wants to know you by your talent, your skills, and all that you have to offer. Don't forget to register today. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Assalamu alaikum. All right, everyone, welcome back. This is Edward Ahmed Mitchell again, the director of CARE Georgia. Welcome to CARE on Air, the Civil Rights Hour. So during the first segment, we just discussed a few current events that have happened in the past week, and I want to address two other things that have happened and share some of my thoughts about how we as a community should be dealing with situations like this. So there were two things that happened in the past week, two major stories related to crime that occurred, one here in the state of Georgia and one in the state of New York. In New York, three men and a high school student were arrested and charged with planning to attack a Muslim community in a city known as Islamburg. Literally, the community is known as Islamburg, and it's up in New York, and it's the target of various conspiracy theories by anti-Muslim hate groups online. It's been going on for years. And finally, a group of men, extremists, right-wing extremists, anti-Muslim extremists, decided they were going to act on these conspiracy theories and buy a bunch of guns and bombs and try to attack this community up in northern New York. Alhamdulillah, thank God, a tip was given to the authorities. Law enforcement was able to arrest them in advance and stop them from carrying out this attack by the grace of Allah. So no one was injured, and the police may be making additional arrests in relation to that incident. So that was a thwarted terrorist attack in upstate New York. Here in the state of Georgia, we had an incident last week where a young Muslim man was arrested and charged with plotting a terrorist attack against government facilities, in particular the White House. And that story was big news for a day or so. And that story will likely continue to unfold as the case proceeds. And so these two incidents, I think, the arrest of these, you know, white males up in New York were plotting to attack a Muslim community, and here in Georgia, a young Muslim man arrested and charged with plotting to attack government facilities. I think it's how the public reacted to these two incidents tells us something. Number one, the difference in media coverage. You know, we can all guess, and I think we all know that when Muslims are accused of committing a crime, it is front page, breaking news, you know, everyone's got to know about it. And when other people tend to commit a crime against Muslims, maybe not so much, doesn't get as much attention, not as important. And I think we saw that last week when the Georgia Muslim man was arrested. It was literally national news that very evening. NBC News reported on it, their national broadcast, the Drudge Report, the famous conservative website had it as its front page story. Our local news literally had a chopper flying over the house of the mother of the man who was arrested. It was big news and very much hyped up as being a very serious, serious threat to, that we all needed to be aware of. Now, on the other hand, these men who were arrested for plotting to attack a Muslim community, you don't see the same coverage. You don't see national news coverage. You don't see breaking news alerts. You don't see helicopters flying over people's houses. In fact, if I ask the random person in the street to even know what happened, they probably don't. Probably have no idea. And, you know, that double standard in how the media deals with stories like this is a real problem, because it gives people the false impression that Muslims are some persistent and significant and serious threat to our nation, when in fact the truth is that most terrorist attacks committed in the United States are committed by right-wing extremists, white, male, right-wing extremists, not Arabs, not Afghans, not Muslims, not Pakistanis, not black extremists, but white male right-wing extremists represent a clear majority of the terrorist attacks committed within our country. But if you ask the average person about that, they probably don't know, because the only thing they see on the news in any significant way is what attacks that are perpetrated or planned by Muslims, and the attacks that are perpetrated by others, not so much. And so that creates and feeds into this atmosphere of Islamophobia. Of course, the fact that there is any Muslim willing to engage in this sort of an injustice, obviously, is a problem, a serious problem, does contribute to Islamophobia. But the way these stories are hyped disproportionately to other stories really does contribute to a dangerous misperception in the public eye. I mean, if you think about when President Trump in December 2015 called for a ban on Muslim immigrants in the wake of the San Bernardino attack, you know, the remarkable thing is he ignored all the mass shootings that occurred that year, all the right-wing extremist attacks. He didn't call for a ban on firearms. He didn't call for kicking out neo-Nazis from the country. He didn't call for any of that. He had focused on the Muslim threat from that one incident as if that one incident was, you know, the only thing that had happened and the most important thing that had happened. But the fact is that terrorism does not know any particular religion or any particular race or any particular culture or ethnicity. Anyone, any culture, any group can have extremists in their midst. And here in America, the primary threat is indeed right-wing extremists. Not the only ones, obviously, but that is the primary threat. And I think the sooner the media starts acknowledging that and treating these stories equally, I think that's going to, you know, calm people down and give people a more correct perception of what's really going on in our country. And more importantly, I think law enforcement has got to be careful that they do not overhype incidents involving Muslims more than they would incidents involving people who are of a different faith. And furthermore, law enforcement has to really take crimes committed against Muslims as seriously as they take crimes committed by Muslims. So we are appreciative of the fact that law enforcement did arrest these men, did take action before they were able to attack the Muslim community in New York. And so, you know, we hope they will continue to take that serious look at that kind of extremism, because I'm seeing it. We see it almost every day. People online making violent threats towards Muslims and about Muslims. There is an anti-Muslim hate group in Georgia that has a Facebook page up for years. They have literally threatened violence against Muslims. They've threatened to kill President Obama. One of them talked about skinning the president, literally. And we have warned the FBI about these people. We have warned Facebook about these people. They are still live, still saying crazy things. And I'm pretty sure that if Muslims had a Facebook page up in which they were discussing things like that about President Trump or anyone else, they would have been addressed and stopped and perhaps even prosecuted by now. And so there really is a double standard in how law enforcement and the media addresses these various threats. And I think that double standard has to be addressed. I met with law enforcement last week in the wake of the incident we had here in Georgia to discuss various things, including how we could make sure that the Muslim community does not experience a backlash as a result of incidents like this. And one of the things I told them is that, look, you've got to be careful with the language you use. And their court filings, for example, about the Georgia case, law enforcement defined hijra, which was apparently a word used by the alleged suspect, they defined that as traveling to ISIS territory in Syria. Well, any Muslim knows hijra does not mean that. Hijra is traveling from one place to another for the sake of God. The first hijra was performed by the Prophet Muhammad, may peace and blessings and prayers be upon him, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, when he left Mecca for Medina along with other Muslims to escape persecution. And of course, Muslims could make hijra anywhere. Some Muslims might say, you know, American Muslims might say, I'm going to Canada because I can't deal with Trump anymore. That's my hijra. Some Muslims may say, you know, I'm African American. Muslims may say, you know, I'm going back to Africa. I want to get in touch with my roots, cultural, Islamic, and otherwise. So that's their hijra. You know, hijra is a very positive word in Islam. And yet, because the way it was used by this young man and because the law enforcement agencies repeated that misuse, now there are multiple news articles using hijra in this very negative way. And so I said to them, you've got to be careful about your language. Same with the word jihad or any other word, Allahu Akbar, all these things that it within Islam have a very positive connotation. But when we hear them repeated by anti-Muslim bigots, by Muslim extremists, and yes, by law enforcement, it really can not only start to steal our words away from us, but again, contribute to that atmosphere of Islamophobia, where people are exposed to Muslims saying these words in a normal context, and they get worried because they assume the worst about their meaning. So, you know, these two incidents that occurred in New York and here in Georgia are concerning for a variety of reasons. The fact that people were allegedly willing to engage in that kind of violence is incredibly concerning, something that needs to be addressed. But, you know, people, as law enforcement and the media, we've got to be careful about how we respond to these things and make sure we're responding in a clear, calm, non-hysterical, and non-discriminatory way. Very important. The other thing I want to note is that this brings up an issue. There were tips from the community in both apparently the New York case. There was a tip from a student apparently, that led law enforcement to catch these men before they took action. And there were also, there's a community tip as well, or perhaps there were more than one here in Georgia that helped to address this issue. And so this notion that, you know, people, that Muslims do not care about the security of their neighbors, or that, well, non-Muslims don't care about the security of their Muslim neighbors is not true. It was apparently people of other faiths who spoke up to protect Muslims in New York by the grace of God. And, you know, that is very important to note, that someone saw these right-wing extremists planning something and they spoke up. And may God reward them for doing that. And similarly, here in Georgia, someone saw something that concerned them and they spoke up. Now, again, we do not, let me be very clear, in either case, you know, all people are presumed innocent until proven guilty. We don't know if the right-wing extremists allegedly in New York are truly guilty of this crime. We don't know if the Georgia individual, Muslim here, is guilty of what he's been charged with. Everyone is proven innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. So let us start with the assumption that we don't know whether they did it or not. But based on the allegations leveled against them, you know, it does appear that people in both communities, Muslim and non-Muslim, you know, took some action to make sure that no one was hurt. And it's important to recognize that that as people, human beings, you know, we should be trying to protect each other from suffering injustice, from suffering harm. And apparently that is what happened in this case. The last thing I want to note is that every year, CARE Georgia has been holding an anti-extremism seminar. And during that anti-extremism seminar, we bring together an imam, an expert on extremism, and me included, I also speak, and we talk about how the Muslim and other communities can counter extremism. Usually people will focus just on Muslims, but no, in our seminar, we focus on right-wing extremists, on Islamophobia. And we also do talk about Muslim extremism as well, and how the two sides tend to make the same arguments. That is, you listen to a Muslim extremist talk and what they're saying, and you listen to an anti-Muslim extremist talk and what they're saying, there's actually a lot of similarity in how the two sides understand Islam. And you can really, by arguing with one, you can actually effectively argue with the other. And so in our seminar, we address the arguments that both sides make about Muslims and Islam. We give advice, the imam gives advice to the youth about how to keep themselves safe from school bullying, from harassment, and also from the lure of any extremist propaganda online. And so, you know, that's something we have done, you know, every year since 2016. We did it 2016, 2017. I can't remember if we did it in 2018, but, you know, there's something we do, and we do it because we think it's helpful to the community, and we think it's helpful for people to know that this is a concern that we take seriously, and we would only hope that people in other communities would take the concern as seriously, because again, the problem of terrorism is not unique to any one religious group, and in fact, it is much more prevalent among the far right. And so we would hope that other communities will take this issue as seriously as we've been taking it here in the state. So anyway, those are my thoughts on that situation. God willing, everything works out, everyone stays safe. And I think our government, you know, also has to be very aware that we have got to look at a way to radically improve our foreign policy, because as long as we are doing unjust things around the world, there, you know, if you do monstrous things, you will inevitably create monsters. And so we've got to improve our foreign policy. We've got to stop harming innocent people around the world. And then hopefully, God willing, that will dry up the recruiting base for extremists who feed off of political grievances. A lot of people say that terrorists, particularly Muslim terrorists, are motivated solely by ideology. But if you look at most of them, when they explain why they did what they did, they'll actually cite some particular political grievance related to American foreign policy. And so if, you know, no country should change policies to mollify extremists. But if there is something we are doing that is unjust, we should change that. And a side benefit of that is reducing the threat against us, whether that is addressing the plight of the Palestinian people, whether that is that we stop supporting corrupt dictatorships in the Middle East, whether that is, you know, we pull our troops out of places they don't belong. You know, if all of that is the right thing to do first and foremost, and also the side benefit, you know, will help protect us from extremists, then, you know, why not? And I hope that with this new Congress, we will gradually start moving our foreign policy in a way that is more merciful, more peaceful, and more just, and that, God willing, that will grant us more peace and security here at home as well. With that, it's 11:35. Let's take another break for PSAs, then we'll come back and do any Q&A, and then we will fade out. Thank you so much. We'll be back in a few minutes, inshallah.
before I talk about what I want to talk about, I just want to dispel a myth that I'm sure most of you are aware that it's a myth, but some of you might not be, and that is the idea somehow that has crept in.
Peace be upon you. Are you enjoying what you're hearing? If so, stay tuned. We'll be right back after these short messages. You are listening live to American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in all of the nation.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Kareem Hassan, station manager for American Muslim 360 Radio. You hear us say often that AM 360 is a place where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. We take that motto to heart daily as we strive to create the best shared freedom space for the group intellect to meet, converse, and even work together. But we're not perfect. AM 360 will always be a work of faith and progress, and that means we'll always need your voice to let us know how we can do this job better. So I'm pleased to announce that AM 360 has established an ombudsman office to hear directly from you so we can improve on what we're doing. Just visit cwsc.us and enter feedback into the search box at the top right home page, and you'll see the listener feedback form that connects you directly with the AM360 Ombudsman. Go ahead, give it a try, and let us know what you like more of, what we're already doing great, and what we can do better. Thank you for being a loyal AM360 listener, and remember, together we can remake the world. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum, everyone, and good morning again. Welcome back. We just took a break for a few public service announcements. It is now 11:38 a.m. If we have any questions, let me check to see if we have any questions, then my engineer can feel free to patch anyone in. While we wait for that, I wanted to share one other thing that happened over the past week, obviously, which is the Women's March in Washington and around the country. CARE participated in multiple women's marches. And obviously, this is one of the, if not the biggest demonstration ever occur in the United States that happened when President Trump was first inaugurated. Those marches have continued over the past few years. CARE participated, and CARE members are part of the steering committee for the Women's March in D.C. And also played a pretty prominent role in New York. This is, we think very important for people to get out and to unite across, various differences and to unite on certain values. And it doesn't mean that everyone in the Women's March agrees on everything. I think it's important to note that there are principles the march lays out, but people, participate, and they may not agree with every issue that the Women's March agrees in. They may not have the same political views or social views. And obviously, as Muslims, we have our own unique set of views about morality and social morality, and that's okay. We maintain those views. At the same time, we work together with people of various backgrounds and views on things of common concern, like economic justice, like criminal justice reform, like women's rights, like the Me Too movement, et cetera. These are all things that Muslims should care about. When Muslims and Islam was teaching about women's rights long before people in America started talking about and addressing this issue. So I'm very happy that Muslims participated in the march while maintaining our own values and our own political and social positions. And there were some great speeches that were given. I want to share one of them with you that was given out in San Diego. There was also a speech given in New York. And I'll play that for you in a few minutes if we don't have any questions, and just let you get a flavor of what was being discussed. Let me see if we have any questions coming in from the audience. Anything from our engineer? No, not hearing anything. Not hearing anything as of yet. All right, very well. So let's listen to one of the speeches from the Women's March out in San Diego.
I apologize. Assalamu alaikum.
Oh, yes, wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. How are you?
We don't have any callers in the studio. They're all listening by way of, you know, they're on the go. But I have a question, and
sure.
That is in reference to care in other areas. I know you're in Georgia, and I'm in Florida.
Correct.
And over a period of time, with all that's happening now that you were mentioning, what's the process of connecting and or maybe my question is about lobbying or having a representative being there at the congressional building, or how does that work?
Yeah.
Or is there?
So in terms of
yes,
yes, I think I drill into my question. So. Number one, I should note that although CARE is a nonprofit civil rights group, lobbying is not a major part of what we do, but it is a small part of what CARE chapters tend to do. For example, CARE Georgia, our staff attorney also will double as our legislative lobbyist during the legislative session on Capitol, our state capitol. So he will travel to the state capitol for a part of his time and, you know, work on making sure that no anti-Muslim bills, anti-immigrant bills, et cetera, are being passed. CARE Florida, I'm sure, does the same thing. For example, I know CARE Texas has a big Muslim Hill Day where Muslims actually go to the state capitol. CARE California does the same thing. Muslims, especially young Muslims, will go to the state capitol in California, in Sacramento, to lobby their representatives and get to practice lobbying. And then in Washington, D.C., obviously, the CARE National Office is in D.C., literally a block away from Capitol Hill. In addition to that, Muslims from around the country get together for Muslim Hill Day. And that's where Muslims will all go to Washington on the same 2 days and meet their various representatives, discuss various issues with them, you know, build connections, talk about issues. And that's very important. I mean, that's for us to make positive change vis-a-vis government policy, whether it's economic justice, criminal justice reform, foreign policy, or civil rights. You know, we've got to interact with our legislators. They've got to know that we are a force to be reckoned with, that we vote, that we show up, care, and that doing injustice to us will incur, you know, a political blowback. And so lobbying and showing up at the Capitol is part of that effort. And we've seen the benefits of that. For example, last year there was a representative named Trent Franks, who is now no longer in Congress. He introduced a bill that would have directed the Pentagon to essentially investigate Islam and Muslim leaders and put together a list of, you could say, good Muslim leaders and bad Muslim leaders, as silly as that sounds. And most Republicans voted for it, but enough Republicans voted against it to defeat that bill. And that was a big lobbying push that CARE and other organizations engaged in to stop that from happening. Another man, Ron DeSantis, who's now the governor of Florida, he was a congressperson. He introduced a bill one day that would have banned the government from working with a Muslim American charity. And again, people had to mobilize, speak out against that, and that was pulled back and did not come into effect. And obviously, there have been other positive things. Just last year, the Senate introduced a resolution recognizing American Muslim history, dating back to the African-American Muslim slaves who were in this country, to modern heroes like Malcolm X and Muhammad Ali, to recent figures like Ibn Hajj Muhammad and others, recognizing the importance of American Muslim history. So the point being that interaction with the legislature, lobbying is very important. It is something that CARE Georgia does. It's something that other chapters do, and it's something that our national office does. So in order to get involved in that, it's actually something that laymen can get involved with, so to speak. Like I said, several chapters will hold big legislative days where they invite volunteers, young people especially, to come visit the Capitol and get practice engaging this kind of work. So if you have any young people in your family or you know young people who might want to get some practice and some experience doing this, Hill Day could be a great opportunity to do that, especially if you live in California or Texas or in the D.C., Virginia, Maryland area, inshallah. So definitely do get involved and get some practice doing that, because it's something that we should all be doing, is reaching out to our legislators and making sure that they know that our voices matter, that our opinions matter, and that we are going to be there to make sure that, you know, we are at the table and not on the menu, inshallah. And I hope that answered the question.
Oh, that's Yes, that's great. Alhamdulillah, thank you so much for answering that. And as you were speaking, I couldn't help but remember my involvement with community organizing and so much, you know, in with the respect to, you know, the legal processes that go that needs to be, you know, in any sense of any gathering of public. So as we reach or go to Congress, do they in turn have a person that, okay, that becomes a liaison that will check to make sure, like, are there any hot spots going on, you know, hot points in being tapped with the Muslim community, like, you know, before we approach them? I know we ask the, I'm trying to think of the, not just the bankers, but individual organizations that are very public oriented, and do they have a, not human relations, but public relations person? And does the Congress have a point person that does that too, to check in with organizations that are really,
I think I see what you mean. Yes. So so each congressperson will have a staff. So at the congressional level, each congressperson will probably have a chief of staff, and that person will manage their office. They'll probably have a press secretary. That person handles media requests. They might have a community liaison. That person would oversee interactions between the office and the public, the constituents. And they might also have a legislative director to help manage the, you know, the bills that are on the floor, make sure the legislator knows what's, you know, what's up to vote for, what he should vote for, what he shouldn't vote for, et cetera. And so the key people who would act as the connection to the community would be that community liaison, and that could have a different title in different offices, or the press secretary for that matter. Either of those two would probably play the most important role in community interaction. Now, the other thing to note, though, is that they're not necessarily going to be proactively reaching out to communities, right? If they don't know about you and you haven't reached out to them, there's no guarantee they're going to reach out to you or know about you. That's why it's important for the constituents to make their voices heard, for the constituents to reach out to the legislators and let them know what's going on, what help they may need, what issues they need to be aware about. Because obviously the legislators, they don't know everyone in their state. They don't know everyone in their district, and especially Muslims. I mean, we are, you know, kind of the new kids on the block as far as they're concerned. So, you know, we've got to raise our voices pretty loud to cut through the noise and make sure that people recognize that we're there and that we matter. And we definitely matter, especially in states like Georgia, California, Florida, Texas, Maryland, Virginia. You know, these elections end in such a close way in those states that Muslims really can play a preeminent role in a deciding factor in how those races turn if Muslims vote one way or another. For example, here in the state of Georgia, in the city of Atlanta, we had a mayor's race back in 2017 between Keisha Lance Bottoms and Mary Norwood. Mary Norwood, who was someone who was an independent, political independent, tended to be supported more so by Republicans to some extent, but also Democrats, was running against Keisha Lance Bottoms, an African-American Democrat, and very close race, and Mayor Bottoms ended up winning that race by about 700 votes. And I know for a fact that Atlanta Muslims voted heavily in favor of Mayor Bottoms for a variety of reasons, one of which is that she took the time to reach out to the Muslim community. She met with CARE Georgia, answered our candidate survey. She visited a masjid, sat through the Juma service, wore a hijab. No one asked her to do that. It was very friendly and took her time interacting with the community. And, you know, the other candidate did not do all of that, did not make that outreach. And so I know for a fact that Atlanta Muslims probably played a deciding factor in how that election turned out. I'm pretty sure more than 700 Atlanta Muslims voted, and I'm pretty sure that those voters voted pretty heavily in favor of Mayor Bottoms. So point being that, you know, we can make a big difference, and I think our political leaders have to recognize we can make a big difference in close races, but that's going to depend on us, you know, reaching out to these leaders and making our voices heard. But again, to do that in the congressional office, the key point people would be the community liaison, whatever that title may be in a particular congressional office, or the press secretary. But really, they have secretaries in each office who will answer the phone and point you in the right direction when you're reaching out to your local congressional representative.
Well, thank you much. Thank you so much.
Assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. All right, it is 11:50. Let me, I'm just going to play this speech from the Women's March in San Diego where a CARE representative spoke. And then after that, we will close it out with some public service announcements. So that was CAIR San Diego speaking at the Women's March in San Diego there last weekend. Great speech that she gave there. So it's 11:54. We'll close out now and thank anyone who may be listening to this later. And again, if you have any questions that you want us to address in future broadcasts, just email us at info@ga.care.com. Again, that's info@ga.care.com. And inshallah, we will speak to you next week. I'll let my engineer close out with some announcements. Assalamu alaikum. May peace be upon you. Subhanaka Allahumma wa bihamdika. Ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta. Astaghfiruka wa atubu ilaik.
Enjoying the program you're listening to and imagining being part of the solution? You don't have to imagine. Now, wherever you live, wherever you work, you can go beyond the dialogue and network with others committed to being part of the solution. CWSC and AM360 connect you to the Model Communities National Resource Directory. Register your skills, knowledge, and abilities today at CWSC.us. Because words make people, but it will take people to remake the world.
Inshallah, when I grow up, I'm going to join CWSC. I'm going to help remake the world for you and me. I'm going to be part of MCNRD and contribute my talent, my expertise. I'm going to apply for a CWSC scholarship someday in honor of a pioneer. I pray I grew up to be a leader, a strong woman, courageous with no fear. But until that day, I need you to stand in my place and be part of the group intellect until I can join the race. Visit CWSC.us because together we can remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum. I am Dupreeta Hadi, Director of the Model Community National Resource Directory, with a question to ask you. Do you really want to be part of remaking our world? If so, then put that thought into motion. Register your knowledge, skills, and experience in the MCNRD, Model Communities National Resource Directory. Feel the action end of your thinking. Make it happen. It's easy and convenient. Go to CWSC.us, click on the MCNRD button, and register today. Don't delay. We will contact you, and together we will remake the world. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Dr. Abdel J. Nuruddin of Your Holistic Health, broadcasted every Monday morning, 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on AM 360. I must say that Genesis Health and Nutrition Center are avid supporters of the AM 360 radio broadcast and community-wide Shura. We're looking forward to you all being in Greensboro, North Carolina, February 8th, 9th, and 10th. You all know that health matters and is extremely important. We will be doing our health workshop, our health intensive workshop. If you want additional information, you can call us at 336-852-3040. Again, that's 336-852-3040, or either visit us at our website at www.drnuruddin.com. That's drnuruddin.com. You all have a healthy and pleasant experience.